Our Underground History segment returns with a whiff of pumpkin pie this month. Thanksgiving is on the table for the regular visit of our house archaeologists. Mark Tvaskov and Chelsea Rose are archaeologists at the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Mark comes alone this month from Sula, but brings in some other guests to help us understand the truth and fiction of the first Thanksgiving. Pilgrims and Indians and turkeys, and some of that is true. Mark Tvaskov, thanks for coming in again.
It's great to be here.
Always good to have you here for Underground History. Ray Gould joins us as well. She's with the Nipmuc Nation of Massachusetts and is on the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Good to have you here today. And Stephen Silliman is with us as well. He's a professor and department chair of anthropology at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. If you're from the East Coast, you know that it's always referred to as UMass, UMass Boston. Stephen Silliman, thank you for joining us.
All right. Thanks so much, Jeff, for having me.
So for either of you in Massachusetts, just as an archaeological issue, is there an identified place where a quote-unquote first Thanksgiving feast happened?
Hi, it's Ray. Not that I know of. I don't know if Steve has ever read any evidence about that. I mean, it's so much of a fiction, which is the topic, I think, of this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say that I don't know of any evidence of that, and then defer to Steve to see if he's, you know, read anything in contrary to that.
All right, Steve.
No, I would agree with that. Yeah, there's not an identifiable location. And as Ray said, there's enough fiction and myth-making that's gone into that particular story that I suspect that precise spot is not locatable. Even though people are currently doing archaeology in the town of Plymouth over the last few years, trying to better identify the 1620 settlement and the palisades and other things there. And actually, one of my colleagues at UMass Boston is doing that. So there may be additional information about life at that time, but I doubt we're going to find the specifics of that story.
So what is the basis for this story? I mean, what was there, if anything, originally that has been built upon?
I mean, my understanding is that it became a national holiday in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And the basis of that were kind of repeated stories. Again, then, you know, clarifying those to be stories about the sharing of resources, this idea of reciprocity between the indigenous people of Massachusetts and the colonists. And, you know, that early first year, there is plenty of documentary evidence of that early first year of the colonists almost starving and the native people coming to their rescue. So it could have been, you know, a continuation and then indeed an elaboration on that first sharing of resources. That would be my understanding.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. It's clear that people in the 1620s, the colonists and native people both, had a sense of whether it was religious or secular or otherwise, some notion of times that you give thanks for things. But I think in the way that the story, as we know from the documentary evidence, has to do with some kind of attempt at celebration and giving thanks. And my understanding is I think the Pilgrims were causing a bit of celebratory ruckus, which sent some local native Wampanoag over to find out what was going on, and then that sort of developed into a three-day kind of feast, which had obviously nothing like the American Thanksgiving feast of today with the kind of food that would have actually been there. But as Ray said, the notion of a Thanksgiving as an American holiday didn't develop until 1863 with President Lincoln actually putting that into place. And it's interesting, the document that establishes it as a national holiday from Secretary of State William Seward does not even mention the 1620 kind of event. It's more about giving thanks and in the context of war, and this was all in the Civil War. So it's a lot about unity and bringing people together and giving thanks, but the sort of incorporation of this supposed sort of 1620-21 events and Thanksgiving, that all kind of arises through popular culture and is in children's books, I think, by the 1870s. But we've got like a 200-and-something-year gap between the supposed event and then the way it gets pulled up into popular culture and national memory.
And Ray Gould, I want to ask you, as a representative of the Nipmuc Nation of Massachusetts, what is the if there is a story in Native tradition about that event, what it is?
My tribe doesn't have one. Again, we're different from the Wampanoag. Mm-hmm. It would have been, you know, the people who would have been more directly involved with this. I mean, we have our own ways of acknowledging similar types of events, but they're actually different times of the year, like in springtime with a strawberry moon and a thanks and a Thanksgiving and a time of forgiveness. And then we have the Como around Christmas. So no, I mean, I've never heard any of our tribal people talk about this as being part of our history or our, you know, our knowledge.
Mark Tveskov, we were talking as we were getting settled in here before the segment started about when things began to pick up speed in terms of representations of Thanksgiving. And for example, the picture on the website that we chose to use is a painting from 1913.
Mm-hmm.
And so does it seem to you that as the holiday, as we added on these modern American traditions, that that's when we began to cast back for a reason to do all this?
That's right. I mean, the era that Stephen was talking about in the post-Civil War era to the progressive era, the early 20th century, that was a time when America, United States, felt really satisfied with itself and was looking for these kind of mythic kinds of scenes and images and stories to create an origin tale for ourselves. And that's where I think that this kind of, I was going to say false, but that's probably not that generous, but using Native American images in this Thanksgiving tale was a way to morally cleanse the origin tale of the United States. Because if you could portray the first Thanksgiving as a act of reciprocity and generosity rather than this act of colonialism, then that's a lot more easy to celebrate. I was just reading yesterday a book by a Native American scholar, Philip DeLoria, entitled Indians in Unexpected Places. And he talks about how in the ideology and mythology of the United States, we frequently use Native Americans in this way, in a way that doesn't have much bearing on the historiosity of what actually happened in something like the Pequot War, or the early history of New England or Oregon, for that matter.
Ray Gould, on that basis of what Mark is talking about, is there a certain level of offensiveness or injuriousness in the story being told that, like, you know, people can say, hey, look, you know, white people and Indians got along once?
It's interesting that you ask that. I did actually write a chapter for an international reader called The Death of Prehistory on this very topic and the idea of authenticity. And I actually used two paintings about that represent this Thanksgiving event, mm-hmm. or event that supposedly happened. I mean, a lot of it really comes down to the persistent need to stereotype Native people, you know, as other, as less than. And, I mean, you know, what Mark's talking about really is a fantasy that's continued. And, you know, actually most of my scholarship is focused on the repercussions and the effects in the modern day. So I've really looked a lot more at, you know, starting with that contact period and then coming up to, you know, 2016 and saying, you know, what are the effects on that? So we're seeing a lot of that, as you know, in the last week and lots in the media. We see it in our everyday schools. And, you know, one thing that I would like to make a call for, because I have worked with public school educators in the past, is to say, you know, what is the responsibility in general, you know, for people like that who are teaching this history? And do they yet tackle this? Or, you know, how effectively do they tackle this?
I wonder, oops, I'm sorry.
No, I'm done. I mean, I could probably talk for an hour just on that very topic. So,
right.
So yeah, I'll just say that.
I was just wondering if the Thanksgiving pageants still go on in grammar school in that same way that when I was a
yeah.
kid, where people would dress up as pilgrims and Indians and that in
a
that way.
Foil for
does
the
that still happen?
And everything?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that still happens in lots of places. I mean, it's interesting that there have been exhibits at Plymouth Plantation here in Massachusetts that have actually tried to unpack some of the complexities of this mythological story and what some of the colonial elements are. But I think the practice of how this is conveyed still to children, like other kinds of histories, is still packaged very much in this kind of reenactment of a happy time of Native people and colonists coming together. And it's one of those interesting things where when we set up a commemorative day, that this becomes this way of memorializing something that has not much basis in history, rather than using those to actually approach the real history of these events. I mean, the same kinds of things have happened for like Columbus Day or even Christmas. These are specific kinds of holidays that are set up in this memorialization way, but they're actually not historicized things. So I think, you know, in as Ray is talking about, if we could get this at a much younger age about it's fine to, you know, give thanks for things and to have meals together and try to, you know, bring people together, but it's also time that we ought to be unpacking some of the histories that go with these particular elements and to realize that the ones that are commemorated in certain ways are not the ones that everyone wants to commemorate.
Let me bring our listeners up to date. This is our Underground History segment. So Mark Tveskov from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology is in the studio with me. Stephen Silliman, you just heard, is a professor and department chair of anthropology at UMass Boston, University of Massachusetts at Boston. Ray Gould is on the line as well. She's with the Nipmuc Nation of Massachusetts and is on the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation. And you can join us as we talk about the first Thanksgiving at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Stephen, you made a reference a while back to the kind of food that was available back then. Not turkeys, not pumpkin pies. What was there?
Well, what's interesting is a lot of what would have been consumed at that time, and there's even, you know, the historical record goes into this as well, that people, they were eating deer. There is a reference to fowl, but whether that is turkey per se or other kinds of fowl is not at all clear. They would have eaten fish. They certainly would not have been eating potatoes. Those had, as South American plants had not yet made their loop fully back into Europe and come back into the Americas. Certainly would have probably had pumpkins and cranberries and those kinds of things, not the sweet sort of cranberry thing that we think of today. So it was quite a different mix. And I think, and corn, of course, would have been there as well in some kind of form. So it's interesting because it doesn't look much at all like the way we have envisioned it to look as an American Thanksgiving meal today. But I also think what's quite interesting is this is a time when these colonists are eating a lot of what we might call native foods. They're the ones that are local, and those are kind of brought up into this American tradition of what it means to have American food or English colonial food, but the same kind of let's say latitude is not given whenever native people in the 1600s were starting to eat cattle, you know, eating beef or pork or wheat. They're getting labeled as, well, they've changed significantly. They're becoming acculturated. They're not as, quote, authentic, as Ray was getting to this issue before, whereas the colonists are allowed to pull in all these native foods and permitted to kind of move forward as English or as, I guess some people like to think, Americans in the making. So there's an interesting double standard that goes with these foods as well.
Ray, you were talking about we're still doing the things we've done for ages now in elementary schools, making the black hats out of construction paper and the shoe buckles coated with aluminum foil, that kind of stuff. I mean, how should this be taught? If you got to be the boss of all the curriculum today, what would you do?
Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, I actually have thought about this because when we think about the fact that November is Native American Heritage Awareness Month, you know, we can't ignore the fact that it is focused around this, you know, this Thanksgiving day that happens here for you know, the whole country. And we've been invited in classrooms usually around this time of year. So while I'm not averse to that, I think it needs to be an open conversation because what's expected a lot is that Native people will show up in their regalia, that they will bring, you know, these very traditional, quote, foods such as, you know, succotash and cornbread, you know, that they will speak in their native language and do almost like a performance type thing. So this holiday has become, in my mind, a performance thing that starts at a very young age. So, you know, even if we can't, if tribal people can't be in every school across the country in this 30-day period, or I would say look beyond that. There are educators who could be doing this themselves and thinking about honest conversations. The fact that Native people are still here, you know, and as Steve was saying, that there is this intense double standard that is applied. And, you know, I have argued that Native people are one of at least the few populations that are not allowed to have culture change. When our tribal leader went in to talk to a classroom once, I was with her, and she was talking, you know, and they were like, oh, tell us about hunting and gathering. Now, this is like, you know, 1995.
Right.
So she said, well, I don't know about you, but I hunt and gather at the local Stop and Shop, you know? And you know, they kind of chuckle, but they've got it. So, like, those small, everyday ways that we can say, you know, there are Indigenous people still here, and this is why they're Indigenous, because they're related to this land going back 10,000 years. That's a special type of, you know, status that other people just don't have. But are they modern people who engage in modern issues, who, you know, get PhDs, who work for the federal government, who are leaders, who are lawyers, doctors? Yes, they're all of that as well. So, you know, that's kind of a broad brush, you know, brushstroke recommendation. But I think we need to start with more honest conversations that kind of start in the present day.
Okay. And I want to come back to Mark Tveskov, your reference to origin stories. I mean, we don't really think of us as creating origin stories, do we? But it happens in a lot of cultures, doesn't it?
It happens all the time, every day. It's what we do. I mean, we have narratives of ourselves and of our past, and they're going to be infused with bias, and they're going to say the things that we want to say about ourselves. And it's going to default to a mean that sort of makes ourselves feel good about where we are. And that's the challenge for not only Native Americans in terms of helping mold curriculum, but historians also have a burden in this too, and trying to tell the story in a correct way. And that's our challenge, and how to do that in a way that, you know, accounts for our own biases in the telling. And the story of the Puritan and Pilgrim settlement of New England is like a complex and in many ways awful story. And, you know, I think that's on us to some extent to tell that story in a more sober kind of light.
I'm glad you used Pilgrims and Puritans in the same sentence, because we tend to forget that they were pretty much one and the same, and not particularly friendly or open-minded people.
That's right.
Yeah. So there you go. So, all right. So all kinds of fun stuff about the first Thanksgiving, whether there was one or not. And it sounds like the evidence is that there was not much like what the representation has been. This has been our Underground History segment. Mark Tveskov in the studio here is from the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology. Thank you to Ray Gould from the Nipmuc Nation of Massachusetts and the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation. Glad you could be here.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
All right. And Stephen Silliman as well. Good to hear from you, professor and department chair of anthropology at UMass Boston. Good to hear from you.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Glad to be here.
All right. Take it easy. And that'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Underground History back again next month. And we'll figure out what we're going to dig up then.